Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Your Biggest Fangirl podcast. I am one of your hosts, Kristen Chavez, a communication specialist at a university on the East Coast.
And I am Victoria Molle, your other co-host. I work in Hollywood for a film production company with the fan favorite franchise.
In July, I traveled from North Carolina to California, not just to visit Victoria, because I have not seen her in a while, but more importantly, just kidding, to go to the San Diego Comic-Con.
Yes, our first convention craziness blitz episode together, which was so fun. And it was really fun for us to take our fangirling in the field together.
As you heard in our last episode, we kicked off this whole weekend with the Her Universe fashion show. So then the next day, the next Friday morning, we got up bright and early to get ready to start our first set of interviews at SDCC.
Before we dive into the interviews and introduce you to all the kick butt ladies we spoke with, I wanted to ask Kristen what her experience was as a first timer at San Diego Comic-Con, because it's my second time going to the con, but this was your first.
Yeah, I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I've gone to different conventions of different sizes. I've gone to the Star Wars Celebration, which is in the middle of Orlando, one of the largest convention centers. And that was an amazing experience. I also went to Heroes and Villains Fan Fest, which is a little bit smaller, I would say, but it's also in a very large convention center. And then I went to San Diego Comic-Con, which is actually smaller than both of those venues, but there's a lot more people, it felt like. And I think like they're all just very, very tightly close together. But that is not to say that I did not enjoy it. In a way, I think I enjoyed it most in the moment. When we're walking down the floor, when you're seeing all these cosplay, when you're seeing everyone like so excited and at these booths, buying comics, buying merch, I was really energized with all of that. By the end of the day, of course, you're exhausted after we had pedometers, after seeing that we walked like 20,000 steps a day. You know,
literally 10 miles.
Yeah, it was a lot. So you do feel very exhausted at the end. And then in some ways, you're just like, I just want to go to bed so we can like get up and get ready to do this all over again. And to be honest, when we were planning this trip, I was really apprehensive. I was just like, this is going to be so busy. I don't know how we're going to make all of this come together and work. Like, we have a lot of things to do. It's just going to be very crowded. Like, schedules change all the time. And I think one thing that many people think about with Comic-Con is all of those Hall H events that you are more than likely not going to get in. So in a way, for me, that was actually a relief to not have to worry about any of that. That I was assured that I can go check out the Doctor Who panel on YouTube like the week after, and I would be fine with that. So actually in the moment when I realized that, like, nope, we've got a schedule, but we're fine. We can do this. Like, we've got this. Like, okay, maybe we can't check out a panel, but there's so much to do on the exhibition floor.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I remember the week before, the day before we went down, everyone said to me, they're like, have fun. I was like, what's that? I'm not there to have fun. I'm there to fangirl. They're two very different things. But no, I feel similarly to you that I the energy is just so contagious, and it's so hard not to get swept up in the enthusiasm, because I know a lot of other fangirls can relate. Sometimes you're an island and no one understands your passion for something. So it is always like chicken soup for the fan soul to be in a convention setting where everyone's just freaking out and matches or exceeds your enthusiasm or love for something. This Comic-Con for me was more about what Kristen said, really taking in the convention floor and the exhibitors and the artists and the people who were there, rather than running around trying to meet the Avengers. And I think both of those experiences are valid. However, it was just different. And I think having that awesome experience I've talked about on the podcast before, where I met Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth, and Chris Evans high-fived me, and it was erotic. And that was really great, and it almost like released me. I'm like, oh, I've had my really cool Comic-Con celebrity moment. I can just go and actually engage with my peers, my fellow fans and creators more. I also really loved, I think we did a good job, or more than I have in the past, because you do get so exhausted at the end of the day, to really expand our convention experience outside the exhibition hall. As we said, we went to the Her Universe Fashion Show, which was a bunch of fun. We explored the gas lamp a little more, the gas lamp district. So something really cool about San Diego Comic-Con is that it basically takes over the entire city, and the convention center borders their historic downtown, the gas lamp district. So it just like spills into the masses, or like the masses spill into the city. We went to a Ghostbusters fan meetup party, which was super fun, and it was super cool to do that. I wanted to also say that we did utilize our pre-convention checklist that I posted last month, though I would say actually look at it when you think you're going through it, because I forgot my wallet, which was a pro move there. But thank God for, and this is maybe a good tip, see if your bank has code access to an ATM, and then also feel very thankful when your coworker is coming down later in the weekend and can bring you your wallet. Yay.
So even though we had some harrowing moments, we realized that the theme of this whole weekend was that fangirls make it work. Not just fangirls make it work, like on the runway, but we have no idea what this weekend will bring. Let's just make sure we can pull it all together. There was one time that we couldn't get into the convention hall early enough to interview. So we're like, okay, how can we make this work? Let's contact our interviewee and see if there's a way that like it can, our schedules can meet up. And it did. And we had a fabulous interview waiting for you.
Yes. Our first guest is Agnes Garboska. She is an illustrator known for her work drawing titles such as the New York Times bestsellers and Gem Award winner DC Superhero Girls for DC Comics, My Little Pony and Gem and the Holograms for IDW, and Grumpy Cat. She's also drawn covers for the IDW titles Gem and the Holograms, Transformers, and Powerpuff Girls. We speak to Agnes about creating art for younger fangirls and which character she illustrates that she relates to the most.
Together and teenagers can pick it up. It's just a great property and there's fun like lessons that like younger readers need to understand, but also just like great reminders for adults as well, which is great and inspiring, and I think it shows that it's for all ages, really. So what does it mean to you to be a fan?
Oh my God, you know, I've never been asked that. I don't know. It just means getting, loving something to a point where it's like, it does consume your life. Like when I become a fan of a character, I just want to get their toys and their merch, and I love dressing up, like even like t-shirts and stuff. And I love Wonder Woman. So I gotta have my Wonder Woman t-shirt because she's awesome, and just finding out what's new with her and what's happening with her. And ooh, it's a new movie. Gotta check this out. And it's just the excitement that you bring to the genre that you just fall in love with, and then you could spread the love to everyone. You don't know about this character? Well, let me introduce you. Here's a pile of books. Read it now.
Yep, that's the way to do it. Okay, so we're gonna switch gears a little bit. So we have a question for you, appropriately themed for Comic-Con. Would you rather wait in line for your favorite panel only to miss it but come back next year, or would you rather meet your icons and then be banned for life?
See, I don't want to be banned. I'm that kind of person. I don't like doing bad things. I know. I think it's a Canadian thing, too, because we're always like, I'm sorry. So you know what? I'd rather miss it just so I can keep trying, because then maybe the coolest opportunity will come out and I won't make anyone mad. But if I get banned, that opportunity, like, yeah, I met them, but I might never meet them again. And I might not get a chance to meet anyone else, which is even sadder.
No, that's a great answer. That's the way I see it, too.
Agnes, where can we support you on social media, and where can we support your work and all the new work you have coming out soon?
My goodness, you can support me on pretty much all the social medias. It's just under my name, Agnes Garboska. On Facebook, it's agnesgarboska.art, because I got an art page there, which is a lot easier to do the thing. But yeah, on all social media, I talk all things awesome and DC and doggies and shih tzus and things that make me happy.
Yes, we're happy too. We're just happy talking with you. Thank you so much for coming on.
So as you heard, Agnes was such a light and such a wonderful force of positivity. Interviewing Agnes was actually one of my convention highlights. And I know this sounds really silly, but we got to interview Agnes at the DC booth in the press area, which was upstairs at the booth. And I cannot tell you how fancy and cool and important we felt getting to go upstairs, and just the view from of like the whole convention floor from upstairs of the DC booth. I had a lot of Drake started from the bottom that we hear like moments and playing in my mind.
As she said, Agnes really enjoyed working on Out of the Bottle, and you can enjoy it now because the graphic novel DC Superhero Girls Out of the Bottle is now out and available at bookstores and wherever you love to get comic books. We'll have a link to that and her social media channels, and of course, all of the other lovely ladies we're interviewing today in our show notes and on our website.
So after our baller interview at the DC booth, we made our way to Artist Alley, where we interviewed our next guest.
Our next guest is Diana Greenhalgh. She is a professional illustrator and designer who primarily works in comics, trading cards, and film and television. Her first love is comics, where she works as a professional inker on numerous independent and mainstream comic books with titles spanning over a decade. She's a pro. She also works as a prop artist and graphic designer for film and television. You can actually see some of her prop work in season one of DC's Legends of Tomorrow, which is one of my favorite shows. She has also designed and illustrated one sheets for 20th Century Fox's Deadpool and X-Men Apocalypse films.
So small indie titles.
Yeah, you know, no biggie. So here's Diana.
So, Diana, what do you fangirl over?
I got my favorite TV shows for the most part. I mean, I was a fangirl over a lot of comic book creators when I started out, but, you know, you start to get to know them as you work in the industry, and they're just normal people, so you sort of, you get used to hanging out with the different people that you wind up looking up to 10 years ago, you know?
No, that's awesome. And, like, you're in such a unique position when you're like, oh, I'm sitting right next to someone that I fangirled over. So what does it mean to you to be a fan?
Honestly, I enjoy the stories. And to, I guess, just have a little bit of a break from work or stress or whatever, I can just kick back and watch a good mystery or a good adventure or something like that. I'm not too picky, you know, I don't worry about how stories have been changing over the years or anything like that, or if they retcon anything, unless, you know, it's my favorite character or something like that, but I've always been artistic. I actually had planned to go into drafting and architecture in high school, but I discovered comic books in my senior year, and it kind of went from there.
Yeah, that's great. And so I am a fan of Legends of Tomorrow, and I know that you were a prop designer on that show. Do your approaches differ in designing a prop versus drawing pages?
Actually, well, when it comes to props, they basically tell me what they need and I make it, so it's pretty straightforward, whereas when you're doing comic book pages, like in comic books, I'm an inker and an editor, but when you're penciling comic book pages, you get to take a script and decide what the layout's really going to look like, you know, where you're going to put the panels and stuff like that. You don't really have that option with a prop, because they know exactly what they want, and you just basically have to build it sometimes from scratch. Sometimes it's something different, like I designed a key and panel setup for a ship for Legends, and it was based on a 3-inch napkin sketch, basically. So the job for that one was to create the drafting document that they then fabricated a 3D print from, which was different from other props that I made for the show where you had to create something from scratch.
Is there a piece that you've designed or a page that you've done that you were most excited about, or is a particular favorite for you?
Probably my Deadpool movie poster. It's funny because I didn't think I was going to get the gig, and I got it. It's probably the one time in my career so far that I've screamed. So my family thought there was something wrong, but no, I just, when I'm not working in comics, I usually draw pinup illustrations, so female characters, fantasy art, stuff like that. So I don't draw a lot of male characters unless it's for work. And I just didn't feel my skills were strong enough, and I guess they decided otherwise, so.
Your skills are definitely more than strong enough. Would you rather have your favorite show be canceled at its peak or have it drag on for too many seasons?
I don't think a show can really peak until, you know, maybe the actors get too old. So I would say keep going.
So where can we find you on social media and support your work?
I'm on Instagram at MechAngel, MechAngel. I'm on Patreon.com at MechArt, so MechArt. I'm on Facebook. If you look up my name, I have a fan page on there. People can follow for updates and stuff like that.
And we will be following along.
So our next interview was also on location in the middle of Artist Alley, and it is Beth Sotelo.
So Beth Sotelo began working in the comic book industry in 2001 as a colorist for Top Cow Productions. Since then, she's worked for Aspen Comics, DC, and Marvel. Her recent coloring credits include DC Comics' Suicide Squad, Most Wanted, and coloring and illustration work for 20th Century Fox. She is also the writer and illustrator for her creator-owned digital graphic novel, Grump, which I was at the end of the con on Sunday afternoon.
But who Beth certainly is not.
No.
So we are here again at Artist Alley, and we are so excited to talk to Beth Sotelo. So Beth, what do you fangirl over?
Oh, you know what? I get super weird over, like, little R2-D2s rolling around and Wally. I have to, like, not look at them directly because I just get all, like, there he is, be cool, just be cool. And once in a while, if I'm brave enough, I'll get a picture or something like that. But I just love to see them, like, rolling around. Even, like, costume character in front of the Subway sandwich shop. I was like, look at him go! So those are the things I like to see around.
Oh, absolutely. I love them. Anytime they're rolling, I was like, I need the picture.
So what does it mean to you to be a fan? Like, fandom at its best is people who, they like to share their incredible knowledge, like this depth of knowledge over this one specific subject. And the thing I like is when they're really, they readily share that with other people. Like, they get super excited when there's, like, this like-minded person that has the same love for this thing, and together they just kind of try to build the masses. There's this other side, though, where they're not as, like, forgiving of other people's knowledge over this thing that they love, and you kind of have to love it the right way or long enough. So I like to see more of the former, like, people with this inclusive, like, kind of, like, yes, let's share the love of this thing that we all adore. Like, I really help create those promotional images to help the film succeed?
That in particular, working with 20th Century Fox, you have to have good likenesses because everybody wants to see their stars looking like their stars. It has to be recognizable because they spend a lot of money on that star, and that's the guy who's gonna or the girl who's gonna sell the movie. Fortunately, I did an illustration that was the Trolls, so that was a little bit easier, and that was a lot of fun. Most of the work with them was coloring over this artist named Alex Conant and another artist, Joel Gomez, and I color over their pieces. And it's basically the same as a comic book. You make sure you got the separation and everybody's recognizable. You get the mood right. Fortunately, they usually have a lot of photo reference, so I can kind of see what colors they're using on the movie and just get something punchy so when people scroll through fast on Instagram, they might stop on it and click the little heart.
Is there a piece that you love the most? Do you have a favorite to do?
I do have a favorite. It's going to be that troll piece that I illustrated on my own. Yeah, and other than that, there was this really beautiful piece that Alex Conant did. It was a timeline of Hugh Jackman for his Wolverine movies, and it was for celebrating like his entire work on the movies. He put a lot of work into it. I did, some other artists did, and they shelved the project. So nobody ever got to see it, and there's this beautiful picture hanging in one of the executive's office, and he's like, yep, there it is. They didn't do anything with it, and he kind of just harumphed and didn't really say much more about it, but that was a lot of fun to work on.
Okay, well, if there's a way that Your Biggest Fangirl can help petition to get that out there, we're on it.
No, I know. We sneakily, like, release piece by piece some of the pictures that were on it, but in the official capacity, it's just not going to happen.
such a bummer. Would you rather be on a team of superheroes where you're the only one with superpowers or on a team where everyone else has powers except for you?
Oh, like a leader or like the follower? I think I'd be more helpful on a team where I didn't have the superpowers because then maybe I can, like, coordinate the effort or something. Because if it's just me with a bunch of people without, it's just a waste of manpower. So I would think I would go the other way around and be the person who didn't have the powers and just kind of, I don't know, give them a ride or something. The guys who didn't fly or something. I think that would be helpful.
No, that's exactly. What are the guys that can't fly? What do they do? That's when you're coming. Exactly. So... thank you so much. Where can we find you on social media and support your work?
BethSotelo.com. Super simple. You can find my social media stuff there. Midimew, MIDIMEW is the handle that I go under for most of the things, Twitter and Instagram. And, yeah, that's probably a good place to start. I have my creator-owned grump. It's on BethSotelo.com. You can have some looks at some of the pages, and I'm working on book 2.
It looks so fun. So thank you so much for talking with us today.
So for me, it was actually really interesting to listen to Beth talk about her career because I'm someone who's kind of getting new into reading comics. And so I couldn't tell you exactly what a colorist does, what an inker does and everything. So it's really great to be able to put like faces to these positions and talents. And so it also gives me a greater appreciation for all of the amazing and hard work that goes into creating a comic book that you're just going to love and fall in love with.
Okay, so remember when we said we had problems getting to an interview on time? So that interview was with this author that we may love and have wanted on the podcast since we conceived of it, E.K. Johnston.
If you don't know who she is, E.K. Johnston is an archaeologist turned author who has lent her words to retellings like Exit Pursued by a Bear and Spindle and so many others. She has also contributed 2 works to the Star Wars canon with the young adult novel Ahsoka and the short story By Whatever Sun featured in the From a Certain Point of View anthology. Her repertoire continues to expand with the novel The Afterword due out to come out next year. And it was really exciting because at Comic-Con, right before we had interviewed her, it was also announced that she would be writing Queen's Shadow, a novel based on Padme's transition from queen to senator, which is a dream come true for her.
And me. It was a dream come true for me, too, to get a Padme Amidala novel. Okay, I'm really excited. And we ask E.K. about it, so we'll just get into the interview while I pee my pants.
Contributes to your fandom's canon.
Well, it's weird. because for a long time I thought, like, oh, that would be, like, such a perfect dream. And then, of course, it turns out to be deeply terrifying. But it's been kind of fantastic. I've sort of taken some steps to keep sort of fan Kate separate from author E.K. Johnston, just mostly for my own sanity. But I still get to write the characters that I love, and I get to, like, you know, give myself little sort of winks and nudges every once in a while, which is fantastic. But for me, it always comes back to the community. Like, these are people that I've known since I was 14, and just sort of coming onto the internet for the first time. And so getting to sort of keep these relationships and maintain these relationships and make new ones now that I get to travel a ton has just been absolutely fantastic.
So a little more on that, how do you balance engaging in the community as a fan while maintaining your professional obligations? Especially, like, this con, there were some announcements.
So usually I tend to keep my fan stuff in person, which is one of the things I really like about coming to cons, is that I get to see people that I know online, just because it's so difficult to convey, like, everything you need to convey on Twitter or Tumblr. So it's wonderful to sort of see people in person and sort of do fandom in person, which is something I never thought I'd get to do. And then online, I try to be a little bit more formal, and a little bit more sort of, I guess, professional, mostly because my family also follows me on Twitter and my dad emails me every time I swear. So it's kind of nice to have that I'm allowed to have that separation has been really important for me sort of as a writer and as a contributor and as a fan. It's been really, really sort of necessary, but also very good.
That's something we discuss a lot on the podcast, is how to balance professional life or even just your fan life and your real life obligations. So it's really cool to hear from someone like you on how you balance that, those aspects of yourself as well. Broadening, talking about, like, all of your work, what draws you to put original spins on familiar characters and stories in your writing?
I get this question a lot at schools because kids always, I'm sure their teachers might help them, or sometimes kids are just brilliant on their own, but often they are actually. But I like that question a lot because the short answer is anger. Like, I remember reading these fairy tales and these stories when I was younger and being like, where are all the girls? And then when you get to high school English, or if you take an English class at university, and it's like, let's talk about all these dudes, and you're like, for real now? And particularly with the fairy tales, you get these stories that, like, these men wandered around Europe stealing from old women, and then Walt Disney and various other companies sort of merged them to make them more appealing to modern audiences, and now you have this, like, it's not just me, there's this whole host of female authors and non-binary authors who are, like, it's our turn now, and they just sort of take the stories and make them into whatever you can because you can, and I absolutely love that about retellings.
That's so awesome. So what do you consider to be one of your finest moments of fangirling?
Oh my gosh. So when I was at New York Comic Con the first time, just before the Ahsoka book came out, I was staying in a very fancy hotel, and I got in the elevator, and then, like, this woman and her partner or companion, whoever, came in after me, and I realized it was Alex Kingston, and the elevator doors closed, and I literally spent the next, like, 10 minutes looking at my shoes, being like, don't say anything about her hair. Don't say anything about her hair. Don't say anything about her hair. Because she's like, she's at the hotel. She's not working anymore. Like, she just wants a sandwich or whatever. And it was just, and then the next day I got in the hotel, or I got in the elevator, and Alex Kingston got in again. So we had this, like, amazing, like, double, she probably did not remember the first one because I literally just, like, disappeared into the corner and stared at the carpet. But, like, it was this, like, amazingly awkward thing that happened twice because I was like, she's at the hotel. Just give her space.
Is there a particularly cool moment where your Star Wars fandom has kind of meshed with, like, your professional Star Wars life?
Oh my gosh, like, all the time. All the time. I think my favorite Star Wars moment at a convention, it happened at Dragon Con last year, and there was this little girl in a Hermione costume, and we were at the Star Wars writers panel, and there were, like, it was like a 500 capacity.
when can I have more? And I was like, this tiny 8-year-old felt confident enough in her Star Wars fandomness to get up in a room of 500 grown-ups and ask that question. And I was just like, we have succeeded in passing the torch. Like, it was one of the greatest moments of my whole life.
Gosh, that's amazing. So you're a champion of inclusivity in media and fandom. What can fans do to carry on that torch?
I think for me, the most important thing is to, like, be aware of what's going on around you. Like, be aware of what conversations are going on Twitter, even if they're difficult for you to follow because you don't understand them, or difficult for you to follow because they make you uncomfortable. And if they make you uncomfortable, you should probably be paying attention. And I think the other thing, too, is that, and what I try to keep in mind when I'm looking for arcs to read or looking for authors to support or even fans to support in terms of cosplay or whatever, is I try to send the elevator back down. Like, if I'm on this floor, I don't want to be here alone with all these dudes, so I'm going to send the elevator back down and hope that, like, more people can come up, because it's not like we're going to run out of space. It's a very big galaxy, and it just gets better every time more people show up.
I love that. So we play a fandom Would You Rather game on our podcast. But so we picked one question from our game especially for you. So if an evil supervillain was to take over the world, would you rather take down Emperor Palpatine or Lord Voldemort?
I would rather take down Voldemort because I think it would be easier. Like, he has sort of identifiable weaknesses in a way that Palpatine doesn't. Palpatine's much smarter. And he's much better at, like, pitting friends against each other than Voldemort was. Like, Voldemort is very much, like, brute force, whereas Palpatine's like, I'm just going to take 60 years and ruin the lives of millions of people.
Okay, so where can we support you on social media? And can you tell us about some exciting things you have coming up where we can read maybe some more books?
Sure. So I'm on Twitter at EK_Johnston, and same on Instagram. And Tumblr, it's still EK Johnston without the underscore because they don't let you do that on Tumblr. And I have two books coming out next year that I'm super excited about. The first one is in February. It's called The Afterword. And it's kind of like a David Eddings-style quest, but, like, after the quest. So the thief and the apprentice knight get home, and they're like, we've saved the world. What do we do now? Also, literally everyone who was a cis dude in the David Eddings version is not in the book that I wrote. It's called The Afterword. And then in March, I think March 5th, I have a new Star Wars book coming out called Queen's Shadow, which is about Padme Amidala and her transition from queen to senator. And, of course, she doesn't do that by herself because she has Sabe and all the other handmaidens with her. And I'm so excited to share that one with everybody.
As are we. We were losing our minds when it was announced. Kate, thank you so much for joining us. It has been such a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you for waiting through the crazy line shenanigans this morning.
We had such an amazing time interviewing all of these lovely, lovely ladies. But because we're also so busy with these interviews, I think it's important for us to take a moment and reflect and see what we would have to do differently. Victoria, do you have any advice for future congoers?
Yeah, don't forget your wallet.
That's a good one. Number one.
It was funny. We saw that Mark Hamill had this great tweet mid-con saying, remember, hydrate, pace yourself, and get plenty of rest. And I think that was really important to us too, or at least to me, that was something I really kept in mind because we were fast and furious and we were having a lot of fun. But it was, we wanted to pace ourselves so we could have fun all 4 days. So definitely the pre-convention checklist item, pack snacks. Kristen can attest, I was a bottomless pit. Like, I could not have enough granola bars. And then we would leave the convention, and I'd be like, let's eat.
I was going to object to that, though.
Yeah. And then I think it was also really important that we did an early night on Friday night, because we were out late after the fashion show, and we had that Ghostbusters party on Saturday night. So I think it was important that we kind of took a breather and rested up.
And as busy as we were, I think we were really good about making sure we had fun, because as we mentioned earlier, it's hard not to feel infected by all of the fan energy that surrounds you in the convention hall. So in some ways, I wasn't emotionally tired because I was energized by all of the other people in the hall.
Oh, one piece of advice I have, because we spent our Sunday morning and afternoon looking for comics, like certain comics that we really wanted to get. So something I noticed is that Comic-Con is a great place to go for Golden and Silver Age and Bronze Age titles. It's definitely where you want to go for a rarer find, a deeper cut. Because we were looking for more modern titles, and things that had come out in the past, God, like...
5 to 10 years?
No, like 3 to 5 years. So, and we couldn't find them, and I was getting really frustrated because I was like grumbling to Kristen. I'm like, I cannot be the only thirsty fangirl here looking for the Loki comic. But yeah, that was just something else that I remember I wanted to bookmark from our experience.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make everyone aware.
Yeah. And for me, I think comfortable shoes is always good because on one of our very long days, I was wearing a Miss Marvel dress. And even though my teal sneakers did not match at all, I was like, my feet will thank me later. And they did. So if you can, my advice would also be if you do whatever your heart desires for cosplay and stuff like that. But it may not hurt to have an extra pair of shoes. Yep. Or something that you can switch into.
For sure.
There's a lot of walking.
There's so much walking. Yeah, no, I think that's a great piece of advice. Because also it kind of goes back to the thing of like you have to pace yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So if you max out and destroy your feet on Friday, then you're not going to be able to enjoy Saturday and Sunday as much.
Yeah, yeah. It's about self-care physically and mentally, and Comic-Con can be a great place to do both.
Oh, also con brain is a thing. Yeah, no, the con overstimulates you from a sensory perspective. There are all these sounds, there are all these sights, and then you're just like around all these people. And then by Sunday morning, everyone is starting to smell, us included.
Yep.
That it really is, it is exhausting in a way. So be mindful and like accepting of that, that con brain is a thing, and your brain might be a little fried, but it'll be... fried in the best way. That being said, we're gonna sign off and go to bed.
It's been a long weekend for us.
Yeah, like grandmothers. But please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast so we can go to more cons and bring you more interviews with just completely epic and awesome female and male, we're not exclusive, female and male creators.
And if you have any favorite memories of San Diego Comic-Con or any other convention that you've been to, share them with us. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at YBFG Podcast, and we're on Tumblr at yourbiggestfangirl.tumblr.com, and we would love to hear your stories.
Until next time, fangirls.
Bye.
Our theme song is The California Lullaby Instrumental by Josh Woodward, used under Creative Commons Attributions 4.0 International License.